Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Good afternoon, Vietnam. Father Daniel joining us from Hanoi?
Yeah, we're recording this beforehand, but I'll be in Hanoi while we're talking about this show.
He's not really in Hanoi right now. Following Jimmy Kimmel's Monday, September 15th monologue about the Charlie Kirk shooting, his show was taken off the air indefinitely after FCC Chairman Brendan Carr pressured ABC over Kimmel's factually incorrect remarks regarding the political affiliations of the alleged shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump and others on the right applauded the move. So while cancel culture of the last decade and the political correctness movement over the last 30 plus years have been driven by left-leaning circles, it's not like the right is immune to the temptation of censorship.
Course.
Right?
Yep.
You need to only look at the McCarthyism.
That's right. It's just human nature.
Right. All right. The Catechism of the Catholic Church, 1740, says, quote, "The exercise of freedom does not imply a right to say or do everything. The Church distinguishes between license, i.e. saying anything at all, and freedom of speech, where speech must be ordered toward truth, charity, and respect for others."
That's correct.
Should society be policing speech other than through the monetary liability threats for things like defamation and slander? Like lying is immoral, but it's not illegal in most instances. Is that the right approach? We just let the rest of it, throw it up on the wall and see what happens?
That's a great question, Chris. And as everyone knows, I get these questions at the last second, so I got to think on my feet here. But there's no doubt that these are topics we should be discussing as a society. I don't pretend to have a perfect answer on this. What the church lays down is principles. So what you just discussed about freedom of speech does not mean that you can say anything you want. And the church in the catechism goes on to talk about calumny defamation. And another term, which is not coming to me right now. But the case is that not everything that we say is it should be said or that we could say should be said. And so that requires some self-restraint, some self-control, which Jimmy Kimmel was obviously not exercising in this case. And because it didn't, he was trying to make a narrative go in his direction and go according to his cause. And that was really that was poor taste. I've read his comments. And it was really just out of place. It was, if anyone were shot, I don't care what their political persuasion is, especially if they've got two young children and a young wife. I mean, show a little bit of
common sense. Exactly. All of what you just said, I totally echo. I just think that the government getting involved in pressuring.
Problematic.
Yeah, I think that's problematic. I think you should just let the marketplace do its thing and let, like, what's happened. He's since been reinstated, and now you have two of the major local TV station owners saying they're not going to broadcast his show. They're going to do some, you know, news segments instead. And let the marketplace, because, you know, if the government had not gotten involved here, you wouldn't have gotten the backlash now of.
Right.
Of the, so you should just let it, you know,
let
play out the way, and you know, like I kind of suggested at the beginning, where, you know, there's a reason why lying is not illegal, right? It is immoral.
It's always immoral.
It's always immoral.
And it impacts the character of the person who lies.
Yeah. No, so I just feel like that,
and it makes it very difficult for us to operate as a society when everyone is lying.
Yeah.
So I think there is an interest that government does need to take in laying down basic rules and guidelines. But typically that goes through a process, a legislative process, which allows things to be sorted out as to what's really important and what's not.
Yeah.
I mean, the saying goes that it's really bad to make policy based on exceptional circumstances.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to wait. You need to sort things out and come up with legislation that's thought through with time as far as what's good for our society and what's not. I think these knee-jerk reactions where there's political pressure being exerted is usually not a good place to be.
Yeah, just let him cancel himself by you know, his ratings.
Yeah,
going
I mean,
down and nobody
people
listening
just stopped
to
watching
anymore.
Him
right.
because like this guy's irrelevant. He's mean spirited.
Yeah,
and it's not something I don't want to be listening to. Unfortunately, there are people who gravitate towards that, and they're being fed on that. And that's on the right and the left. I mean, I listened to the parts of the Charlie Kirk Memorial the other day, and in general, it was beautiful, really, really wonderful and beautiful testaments. And you know, his wife Erica forgave this young man, Tyler, who shot her husband. It was just very moving and very powerful. But then at times too, it was politically kind of co-opted, and you know, different people spoke. And there was one speaker who spoke in a kind of a mean-spirited way, like, we hate those on the left. I was like, that's out of place.
Yeah.
So we need to balance out those things and have a deeper dialogue in our society.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
So our last segment, we were talking about free speech. We're going to continue on that subject in on a different news story. So you remember Lucy Connolly? We talked about her.
Lucy who?
Lucy Connolly. We talked about her a few weeks ago.
Jog my memory. I don't remember.
She was the woman sentenced to 31 months in prison for a post she wrote on X, basically, that was considered to be inciting folks to attack the hotels that were housing these Muslim asylum seekers in Britain.
Oh, in England. Got it.
In England, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, in a different case that just happened here recent, five armed British police officers arrested a comedian arriving at London's Heathrow Airport. Graham Linehan was intercepted after a flight from Phoenix and was detained for hours at the police station after he tweeted the following, quote, "If a trans-identified male is in a female-only space, he is committing a violent, abusive act. Make a scene, call the cops, and if all else fails, punch him in the testicles." Although he didn't use the word testicles.
Okay, unquote. That's kind of funny, Chris. Sorry that I have to laugh on air on that one, but that's pretty good.
So he got, you know, he was arrested for saying that. So yeah,
that's because they have hate crime legislation and laws in place in various countries around the world, which has been put in place precisely to do that. It's to shut down political dialogue and civic dialogue about this issue of homosexuality or transgenderism.
Yeah, well, it's the same question draconic. We were asking about before. You know, should comments be punishable as a criminal offense? You know, lying is wrong, but not illegal, and generally not punishable as a criminal offense. This right. is a political statement that's, you know, has neither have some.
Well, it's a statement of biological fact.
Yeah.
That has been obscured by ideology.
But it's crazy where Britain is going. I mean, that this guy, they waited for him to fly in from the U.S.
To land in this. I mean,
and
that's
land,
ridiculous.
That required quite a bit of forethought. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's scary. And I think that's why, I mean, we talked about this a little bit before, that's why people in many countries around the world are they're going out and marching in favor of Charlie Kirk and saying, we are Charlie Kirk, because they're trying to speak up and their free speech is being silenced in these countries. It's a scary reality, but I think it's very important. We look at all the histories throughout history lessons. We look back through history and we can see that if we don't speak up for our rights when we have the opportunity, you begin to lose them. So we need to be doing that right now.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. According to the author of a National Review article I just read, the implicit message of the gay rights movement was, quote, live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
While the implicit pro-trans demand is, quote, agree to every claim we make, no matter how implausible.
Or no matter what science says.
Right. So he lists what he thinks accounts for the intensity and anger of trans advocates. So number one, that people who have transitioned have poured a massive amount of emotional and financial investment into their choice and there's no going back. The last thing they want to hear is that it's all a fraud, that they've harmed themselves via hormones or surgery for no reason. Number two, trans advocates blame the psychological distress of people suffering from gender dysphoria on those who question trans orthodoxy, mm-hmm. to the point that they think it's the reason why so many trans individuals are more susceptible to suicide. Mm-hmm. So basically they think by questioning it, you're causing people to commit suicide.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So whatever the new cause, the third point he brings up is that whatever the new cause, that the latest cause is, it has to be invested with moral urgency, that the unquestionable righteousness of the civil rights struggles, generally of which they're lumping this in, is to ensure that you're on the right side of history. So I'm going to talk a little further about different angles of this, but let me get your initial thoughts on that.
Yeah, these are rather trite arguments that have been rolled out with other causes in the past of, you know, homosexuality and other things that are in a similar way. And there's just a root difference that they're not acknowledging. You know, when you talk about civil rights, I think there's definitely something that is, we are all equal before God, no matter what the color of your skin, what your racial background, that's definitely the case. But when you start getting into the realm of behavior, that's different from the skin tone, and it's a different reality. And I think that underlying reality is sometimes just overlooked, or it's glossed over, or it's obfuscated in order to hide, you know, what you're really trying to do. And I did some research early, my first book on the roots of the homosexual rights movement. And many of the guys who were at the beginning of that back in the 1930s and 40s, they talked about, you know, we have to really present homosexuality not as what it really is and what it's really connected to, but just kind of hide it. It's got to hide its ugly rear until we can get the nose of the camel under the tent. That was the phrase that they used. And that's, I think, similar to what's happening here. So some of the confusing arguments that they get people wrapped around the axle are forgetting the underlying biological realities here.
I think that's an interesting distinction, behavior versus your innate characteristics.
That's right. Now, there's been many, many efforts to prove that there's a gay gene or that there's a transgender gene. All of those scientific efforts have failed because it's not related to underlying biological reality. It's related to environmental factors. And there have been study after study that tried to prove the gay gene, failed. And on the other hand, many, many scientific studies which have looked into the environmental factors have found, yes, there are environmental factors that lead people to gender dysphoria, confusion about their identity, the angst that leads them to want to change their physical appearance. So, yes, there are environmental factors. So let's take a look at those. But, you know, at the end of the day, too, Chris, I think we also have to look and see what is good for the human person. What is going to help a person to be happy and to flourish? It's not cutting off body parts or inserting false limbs that make you look like a woman or make you look like a man. That's not going to make you happy fundamentally.
Yeah, I want to focus, though, on this moral urgency to be on the right side of history.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I would say that many of the things that we now commonly accept as having been on the right side of history, and we don't see as related to today's debates about what we're talking about now, mm-hmm. with the trans movement, I think those are very much the fruits of the same poisonous tree. Mm-hmm. Okay, so marriage. You know, marriage has become a contract based, mm-hmm. on personal fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather than being a lifelong vocation, it's this, you know, Hollywood style, you're not a covenant where, you know, it's quid pro quo in the contract.
Just as long as it's convenient, we'll stick together.
Right. So divorce is not seen as problematic anymore.
I mean, yeah, and that's really problematic.
It almost seems like in the Hollywood circles that as it's inevitable.
Right.
You know, you don't expect somebody who's a movie star to get married and that to be their lifelong partner, right? You think this is the first of five.
Right. It's unfortunate. So,
then you take a look at contraception and separating sex from procreation.
Mm-hmm.
Sex becomes about my choice, my body, my gratification, rather than for procreation.
Or for the good of the other, even.
Or for the good of the other. And so I think this gives rise to this transgender ideology where if sex can be separated from procreation, mm-hmm. likewise, the body can be separated from personal identity. So if sex
or
doesn't...
Or even from chromosomal identity, reality, the underlying biological reality, you have XX or XY in every single cell in your body.
Yeah, well, if sex doesn't mean children, then a male body doesn't have to mean manhood.
Right.
So I think the common thread here, though, is this autonomy of nature.
No doubt. That is, I think that's the root cause. It's a misunderstanding of freedom. It's just touting my freedom with no limits whatsoever. So I can create my own reality.
Yeah. Yeah. For marriage, it's I define when my commitment ends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. For sex, I define, you know, what sex means for me. For transgenderism, I define what my body means. So it's like once the natural law is severed from human dignity, every boundary is now negotiable.
Completely.
Yeah. So is there going to be a bottom that we hit here?
No, if you follow the principle, it just keeps going worse and worse. It gets more and more bizarre.
Because we're not going to revisit divorce. You know, if I'm being realistic, we're not going to revisit contraception or divorce. Maybe contraception.
I think
society has moved on.
Let's go back to the 1840s, I think, in England with William Wilberforce and the reality of slavery. You know, slavery was diffused throughout the whole world. You had, people involved in Africa and trapping them, the Arab traders, they were shipping them. It was the big business of its time. And there were commercial interests that were behind it. And William Wilberforce started a campaign that was based on a moral principle. It was based on a truth that goes beyond the passing fads of time or of commerce. He said, no, this is morally wrong. I think we've kind of sidestepped that whole debate with divorce, for example. In our society, divorce is like, oh, yeah, it's okay. What Americans don't realize is that the divorce rate is, you know, near 50% in the United States, but there's no other country in the world that even comes close to our divorce rate in the United States. Why is that? It's because of the laws that we put in place with no-fault divorce.
Right.
It's because of the culture that we've created.
But we aren't even talking about it.
We're not talking. We should be talking about it because it is at the base of a lot of these problematic manifestations that we're seeing. And the broken down families. And dysfunctional families breed more dysfunction and breakdown because I see this in my work with young people for many years. I did youth work. And you could tell immediately if a kid came from a broken family. I just got to know the telltale signs. I could tell if there was something going wrong in a kid's family just by their behavior. So a lot of what we're seeing in manifestations in our society today, especially of transgenderism and homosexuality, are a reflection of the broken family, which goes back to the whole issue of divorce.
Right. Well, I mean, if we had a disposition that our government's role was to support the nuclear family. Like every law that you enact, you first ask this question, does it support the nuclear family?
Does it help the family? Right.
Then I think we'd be on a much healthier path to, better social outcomes.
There's no doubt whatsoever.
But there's nobody advocating anything. It seems like I said that is a settled issue.
Well, let's unsettle it. I think this is what we need, the disrupting force of truth to call us out and say, hey, we need to talk about this as a society. And I think God's going to raise up people that will start to speak about this and awaken people's consciences. One of the things I love about Pope Benedict the 16th in his encyclical letter, Deus Caritas Est, he talks about the power of Christianity, the power of Catholicism to awaken consciences. And that's what its role is in the political and in the social realm. Not for the church to run the state, not for the church to tell everyone what to do. We don't want a theocracy, but the church has a role as a conscience of pricking us. And like, it's like, hey, that's not right. And starting conversations, like, let's get back to the truth.
I guess what I'm saying is it wasn't a shock to me to see Roe v. Wade overturned because we've been talking about it
for many years.
Right.
And there was a whole groundswell of people understanding it, looking at the science behind it, realizing how much it's hurt people.
Yeah. I don't see anybody talking about the nuclear family. Well, maybe the nuclear family, but divorce as being something that needs to be...
I do see some groups talking about it. There's a group called Communio that has begun to speak about it more and actually working with bishops and Protestant pastors around the country to focus on strengthening the family and pointing out the statistics on how divorce is so detrimental for our society. Unfortunately, I think we're seeing contrary forces as well. And I've noticed this in particular in some of the feminist ideology that's out there, especially through college campuses. A lot of young women who have imbibed ideas about their personal happiness in marriage. And I have had 5 cases just in the past 6 months of good men, not perfect. There's no perfect men out there except for Jesus, but good men whose wives just came up to him and said, I'm not happy, I'm getting a divorce, and would not listen to it. And they were talking to their girlfriends, and their girlfriends were telling me, yeah, you need to seek out your happiness. And, you know, he's not, you know, your circumstances have changed. You got to think about your fulfillment. And it's this happiness ideology, which is creating a real problem.
Yeah, it's just so embedded, even in the tax code, you know, that we, you know, forget about policy on anything else. You know, just our stance from the IRS that there are so many IRS specifications that make it easier for divorce and to be single parent households.
Right. Yeah. There's tax benefits in some states, not all states. Yep.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
The, quote, nature rights movement, i.e. the idea of awarding legal personhood to nature, is starting to gain some traction. The Harvard Kennedy School last week hosted a symposium on nature rights as part of their annual Climate Action Week. What constitutes a legal person is a social construct that has changed over time. Traditionally, it's been reserved for human persons or economic actors like corporations. So left-leaning activists and some indigenous nations have been pushing for the recognition of nature as a legally protected person with standing to sue and rights. Specifically, the movement is promoting a neo-paganism and is invoking Pachamama, the Incan earth goddess. I don't know if you ever heard of...
I have, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I pronounced that.
Pachamama, yep.
Okay. That's their basis for... The advocacy of Pachamama.
Mm-hmm.
So environmental stewardship is obviously an important human duty, but...
It is, and it's something that's important to us as Catholics as well, because we recognize creation as part of what God has put in place. It's for our good, and it's a beautiful thing. I think the problem becomes when we invert that reality and we start making creation a god. That's always going to be problematic.
Yeah, I mean, if you give rivers, lakes, and forests the same rights as people, then you have rights without responsibility. How can you then sue, you know, Oconee National Forest?
Well, it's really simple, Chris. Who's going to sue on their behalf? This is just an instrumentalization of nature to get what you want. So there's going to be individuals who try to take advantage of that for their own benefit. That's the real problem behind this, because a lake is never going to sue. Someone will sue on behalf of the lake. And that's where it verges on the realm of ridiculous.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. The U.S. military attacked a boat in international waters on September 15th that was allegedly transporting illegal narcotics to the U.S., killing 3 people. That followed an event on September 2nd where 11 people were alleged to have been killed, or 11 people were killed that were alleged to have been part of a criminal group called Tren Arenga, that they were also killed in international waters for supposedly carrying drugs that were going to be sold in the U.S. So neither boat appeared to be a threat militarily to the U.S. Some are likening this to a police officer shooting a suspect running away just because he believes he has drugs. So when questioned about it, Trump's response was, quote, all you have to do is look at the cargo that was splattered all over the ocean, big bags of cocaine and fentanyl all over the place. And then, in fact, today, the Dominican Republic, a story was came out of the Dominican Republic saying that they had recovered bags of cocaine.
Sure.
So even if we were certain that these boats were carrying fentanyl that we know will likely result in the death of Americans, can we ever justify extrajudicial non-military killings?
Well, I think it's the principle of double effect that comes into play here from a moral perspective. Are you trying to kill the people that are on the boat, or are you trying to destroy the boat and its capacity to come to the United States and then cause all the damage and hurt that it does? If you're not making efforts to try to save the people, I think it is problematic from a moral standpoint. But if you are making efforts to try to save those people, warn them, shoot in a judicious way or sink the boat so that it doesn't, you know, kill the people on board, then I think you could justify it under the principle of double effect, even if a person did die in that case, if you're at least making the effort to save their lives.
Yeah, but see, I find this problematic because there's just no due process. I mean, you could easily envision fishing boat full of, you know, innocent fishermen,
sure,
being mistaken for carrying drugs and blown out of the waters without any investigation. Well,
it depends what you mean by due process. So I think if there's already a principle in play that's been vetted and approved that we are going to intercept any vehicles that are suspected of carrying drugs, okay, then you have the right to.
I know, but then how's a fisherman to go out and make it clear that he's fishing and not when you're under surveillance from the U.S. military? How do you, you know, make it clear? And then maybe you incentivize
Coast Guard
folks.
Vessels are constantly stopping people to review their cargo.
Yeah, well, these
or look
weren't
at them.
These weren't vessels that were stopped
Right, and that's the issue, yeah. Which I recognize. The issue is, okay, there needs to be some sort of process where you give the people opportunity to show that they are of goodwill and they're fishermen. But in this case, maybe there was a process that we just don't know about.
Well, that's what the process used to be up until very recently, up until these two
sinkings of these boats.
It was not the Coast Guard boarding, mm-hmm, finding the drugs.
And it's very possible that they had significant intelligence already.
Maybe, but I still think the even for non-U.S. citizens, the due process here it should override, and we have to go back to the old way.
Well, I think more than due process, it's the moral process and making sure that we are safeguarding human life. Because these are not American citizens, so there's not due process under American law. But there should be treating people under the international law.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crosswires. Navigating News with Faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.